The NFL draft is today. I know everyone's paying attention to that, but there's also basketball. Clippers, Spurs, Game 6. That's the one we're going to concentrate on here. I'm Brian Gibberman on the Podium Game Podcast here with Michael Pina. Michael, how you doing today?
Good, Brian. How are you?
Good. Now, you wrote something that I've been kind of getting on myself you did a much better job explaining it than I did. I forget which of the many websites you wrote it for, but I'll let you tell that. Blake Griffin, to me, has not only you wrote he's been the best player in that series, I think he's arguably been the best player in the entire playoffs. But once the fourth quarter comes around, he's shooting 25%, and he's not playing as well as the Clippers have kind of folded up impartially, and they've really lost two games because of his play late in those games. Now, why don't you go ahead from here and explain why you think that's happening?
Sure. I mean, I do think that Blake is the best player in the series, and that's really saying something with how tremendous Chris Paul's been. Chris Paul's been, I mean, breathlessly astonishing. And then you have Tim Duncan just carrying on Old Man River, Kawhi Leonard. But Blake's been all around probably the best player. He's averaging 24 points, 14 boards, 7 assists. He's averaging more assists than Chris Paul. And as you said, he's wearing down in the fourth because the Clippers have no depth. They have no one who can come in and relieve him. He's averaging 42 minutes a game. And these games are close. And one's gone into overtime. And towards the end, he just doesn't have anything left in his legs. And you could really see it in Game 5, which he was amazing in the first two games of the series. Basically throughout from in the first 8 quarters, I would say, minus the turnover that he had at the end of Game 2, which didn't really make a whole lot of sense, and I don't even know if you can pin that on fatigue. That was just a brain fart. I have no idea what happened there. But towards the end of Game 5, you could really see he had no lift in his legs. He front-rimmed a free throw with a few seconds left in the game. He had a shot blocked by Tim Duncan that, if you watch the replay, that play really makes no sense. Blake Griffin should be able to go around or over Tim Duncan, and he just didn't even jump, really, on that play with the type of explosiveness you're used to seeing. So for the Clippers to win this series, they need Blake Griffin to basically dominate late in these close games, and I don't think he has the energy to do so.
And you're really bad at that. Sports on Earth is where you wrote the article for, where people should go read that. You're supposed to plug that towards the beginning of your answer. You know,
my mistake.
the part that was really telling to me was with the exhaustion. It was the two free throws he climbed. Like he's kind of an arm shooter from the free throw line, but I thought he used even less legs than he normally did on those two free throws, it was so obvious he was going to miss both of them. And I just felt, I felt bad for the guy. And then there was the play where he came down the side, what led to the two free throws. Those have been plays he's been dunking on people's head, and instead he could barely get up, and he kind of did like a twisty attempt at a layup, when it's something I'm pretty confident, if it was early in the game, he would have finished through the guy for an at-one. I forget who was defending at the rim in that situation. And then it's what he has to do on both ends of the court. It's not only all those offensive numbers, he's also averaging over a block and over a steal a game. Now, that doesn't mean he's a great defender or anything like that, but it shows that he's also exerting energy on that end, too, because you don't get steals and blocks just by standing there and the ball coming to you. You have to be making plays and moving around and anticipating to get those statistics compiled. So he's just putting, there's just, to play both ends like he is, for the amount of time, and it's not only time, the amount of responsibility, because he's not getting a break. Like, LeBron can give the ball, is giving the ball to Kyrie at times, and he just lets, and he lets Kyrie go, and he just kind of stands there. Blake's involved in almost every single play, even if it's Chris Paul with the ball in his hands, and it's just too much to ask of him.
No, and you touched upon it with defense. The Clippers deploy one of the most aggressive schemes in the league, and the Spurs love to pick and roll teams to death, and they move the ball like it's covered in lava. So when Blake's man comes up to set a screen, Blake's up there, and he's hedging pick and rolls, and he's trapping, trying to get the ball out of Tony Parker's hands. And after that, you have to recover, sprint back to the paint, and he's doing that for 40 minutes a night. And it's tough. It's really tough. To be fair to him, it's funny because the very last play, or not the very last play, but the most critical play in Game 5 was the inbound to him, where he lofted a floater over Tim Duncan and DeAndre Jordan tipped it in, and the ball was probably going to fall through to be the go-ahead bucket, put the Clippers up one with about 4 seconds to go if DeAndre did not touch it. And so it's kind of like, would we even be talking about this, or would this even be a story if Jordan didn't touch that ball?
I thought it should have never even came to that point. I thought it should have been a foul on Kawhi Leonard for grabbing Paul as he was going to. The play to me was clearly designed to go to Paul, and the timing got broken up because Leonard grabbed him, and maybe Paul embellished it a little bit with him. You can never rule that out. But I thought that was a foul and should have been called.
I think I actually tweeted at you that night because I was sitting up in the bowl at Staples Center, and obviously that's not the best the best view. but what I saw was Paul kind of, I mean, Kawhi was swarming all over. He was draped on him. But I thought that Paul was definitely embellishing the contact a little bit. And in that situation, you're just not. I mean, I'm a believer that you call a foul is a foul, but you're not going to get the whistle in that situation.
Now, all right, so Game 6 is tonight. The Clippers went in there. They split two. So they've proven they can win in San Antonio. This is not the Clippers team that got swept by them a couple years ago. This is clearly a much better basketball team. Do you think they have – are you one of those who thinks that a loss like that is going to break them, or do you think this team has the mental capacity to be able to bounce back from something like this?
I think they can bounce back. I don't think that they will. As they showed in Game 4, after getting blown out in Game 3, obviously, that was Game 4 was a critical game, and they got some production out of Austin Rivers. Some totally unsustainable shots went in, and that's the sort of thing that they need to happen in Game 6. And I don't think that if Austin Rivers and Glenn Davis, if they dust off Turkoglu or Hawes, I don't think betting on those guys coming through is really what you want with your season on the line. Sure, it could happen. Those guys could give Paul, Jordan, and Griffin the rest they need in the first half with some solid minutes. But, again, that's not really a sustainable strategy or a likely outcome, those guys off the bench for the Clippers coming through again. So I want to believe that the Spurs are going to close it out tonight.
After Rivers had that Game 3 and we got all of our beautiful narrative filled, Austin Rivers, Doc Rivers is crying in the locker room stories, he came back and played an absolutely putrid game in Game 4. Like, the game shouldn't even came down to that Blake play because Rivers got so completely lost. Was it Danny Green who he lost?
It was Danny Green
and
in the corner.
And gave him a wide open three-pointer because he just stood there and was standing at the elbow doing nothing with completely no idea what was going on and let one of the best three-point shooters in the league take a wide open shot. Luckily for him, the game was played in Los Angeles, and Danny Green doesn't know how to make shots when it's not in San Antonio.
Well, Rivers' off-ball defense is some of the worst you'll see in the NBA. He's been leaving Patty Mills open this entire series. Patty Mills is one of the best three-point shooters in basketball, especially in big game situations. So that really wasn't a surprise at all. I mean, he shouldn't be playing in the playoffs. He shouldn't be getting minutes. He's not a very good basketball player relative to NBA competition. So yeah, it's tough for the Clippers. You would think that within their starting lineup that they would be able to get more offensive contribution out of a guy like J.J. Redick. Maybe he could have a shining moment, but the Spurs have kind of eliminated him from the entire series, and he's not going to break out tonight. So
no, Robot Kawhi is guarding him.
Exactly. So it's just a really difficult position for the Clippers. I didn't really, coming into the series, I was a strong believer that the Spurs' depth would win out. There's their depth and their experience, and that's proven to be the case so far. That being said, this has been, I say that, and this series has basically been a coin flip in almost every game. So we don't really know what's going to happen, but I like the Spurs at home.
Defensively, we've seen Pop do this strategy before. I went back and looked through the statistics for some of the Suns series that they played. Nash averaged above his points per game in every series he played against the Spurs. Amari had that one series when he went off for 37 points per game, and the rest actually weren't as high as I thought they would be. But Pop is, and he did it with LeBron and with the Miami games. He would just play off him, and he would let LeBron get his, and he tries to cut off everything else. So he's just putting everything on the main ball handlers. So he's kind of, what he's done is he's letting Blake and Paul get theirs, but he wants to take away everything else. And it's smart. I kind of like it. You just leave those guys one-on-one. You try and defend them to the best of your ability. And then he goes, what I'm not going to do is I'm not going to let that third piece in Redick go off, and I'm going to take that away. And it seems to be working pretty well for them.
Yeah, they've sicked Kawhi on Redick, and it's funny because when you watch the first quarter of these games and the Clippers jump out to these leads and Kawhi's on Redick and Chris Paul is just torching Tony Parker, you're screaming at your TV or wherever you're watching the game that you're just, what is happening? Why isn't Kawhi Leonard on Chris Paul right now? But you're right, over the long haul, it's the smart play, or at least it has been so far. And it's funny because J.J. Redick is shooting 40% from behind the three-point line, but it's the shots that Kawhi eliminates before the ball can even either get in Redick's hands or Redick can get off the shot in the first place. So he's done a tremendous job on him.
The most fun thing that could happen for me tonight is I would love Chris Paul to have I'm sorry for bringing this up in advance, a LeBron-esque Game 6 in Boston, whichever year that was. I get them all confused when he was with Miami. Just come out and just torch them and just put the game on his back and completely take it over and win it all by himself. I mean, I think that would be so much fun. It would be it'd be a nice notch on the belt for Paul's career when people, especially for all the people that unfairly criticize his playoff resume.
Thank you for bringing that game up. I really appreciate it.
I apologized in advance.
Yeah, that was 2012 for the record. And it's still, it's a nightmare inducing game.
And all train of thought lost.
Yeah, exactly. But seeing Chris Paul do something like that would be great. I really hate the false narrative of him being a choker in the postseason and not ever having the playoff success someone of his ability should have. but it's going to be really difficult for him to. He's not LeBron. First and foremost, and it's just going to be really difficult for him to do that against the Spurs tonight. But you're right, it would be a really cool thing to see.
You think about who he's lost to. He's lost to the Spurs twice. He's lost to the Lakers, the Grizzlies, but Blake was hurt, and Vinny Del Negro was his head coach and refused to play Eric Bledsoe enough minutes. I mean, there's reasons he hasn't made it farther in the playoffs. It's not like you look at his numbers. His numbers have been terrific. He's had a couple bad moments. The game, the Thunder stuff last year when he had that one bad game sticks out. But when you play enough playoff games, all these guys have bad moments. LeBron had bad moments. I know this is, people won't believe this. Michael Jordan had bad moments in the playoffs. It happened. He didn't play perfectly in every single game that he played. So it's I really hate that people go after Paul because of that.
Yeah, I 100% agree. He's a Hall of Fame player, still the best point guard in the league. And
you think he's better than Curry still?
Chris Paul?
Yeah.
Both ends of the floor, yeah, sure. I would take Chris Paul over Steph Curry. I would. I know that's probably going to either lose me followers or get me death threats on Twitter as soon as people hear this, but I like Chris Paul. I think he's a gamer, and nothing against Steph Curry. I mean, you can't go wrong with
that
guy.
Yeah, that's what I say. You can't go wrong.
Silly thing. Yeah, it's a very silly thing to pick one over the other, but I'm a huge Chris Paul guy.
Yeah, but I put you on the spot and I made you. So
you did, yeah, thanks.
You could have yelled. You could have just went, no, I'm not answering this, you idiot. Could have said that to me. That would have been fine. I'm trying to think what else from this series. Oh, you want to talk? We can talk about Bucks-Bulls for a little bit, I guess. Are you surprised the Bucks have been able to get back into this?
Yeah, I think I'm the last man in America who still believes in the Chicago Bulls. And I love the Bulls. They make me really sad every time I watch them. I think they're built to get to the NBA Finals this season, and for whatever reason, be it health or their shots just not falling, it's just not happening. And I think they're going to close it out tonight. I really do. I think there's been a lot of fluky stuff going on in this series, most notably Michael Carter-Williams' performance in, I believe it was game...
It was game five when he went for 22, okay. 8, and 9, yeah.
I don't think that's going to happen again, and I would bet on Derrick Rose having a good game before I bet on Michael Carter-Williams repeating that performance. And Jimmy Butler's been tremendous, so... I don't know, we'll see what happens, but I like Chicago.
Yeah, I believe in the last game, which was close, I think the game, I'm pretty sure game five was close, if I remember correctly. Butler and Rose were 10 of 41 from the field. One of them went 5 for 20, the other went 5 for 21. That's off the top of my head, but I think that's a thing that happened. Jason Kidd's a good coach.
He is. He is, and from the defensive schemes that they've deployed all season, this has been a top defense, and he's kind of unlocked the length and taken advantage of his team's strength and kind of given them an identity, which is tremendous. And say what you want about Michael Carter-Williams, I think every time he shoots the ball, it's probably not going to hit the rim, but... Yeah, I think Jason Kidd's going to do good things for his career long term, and I think they found a coach there. So it's right on for the Bucks. Good for them. And I mean, their time is not now. Their time is maybe next year, the year after that, the year after that. But it's good to see them kind of soak in this experience and get the playoff wins that the Boston Celtics could not. So right on for them.
It'd be fun to get a game seven out of that series, though. I think that's the only one left that started off 3-0. Yeah, because Portland lost last night. It'd be cool to get a game seven after a team being down 3-0 And I would love to see the panic. Oh, I can't even lie. I don't want it to be because of injuries, but God, do I love seeing the Bulls franchise fail. I'm not a salty Knicks fan or anything, I swear. But, yeah, seeing the Bulls have to crumble, seeing the Bulls crumble would just make me so happy.
Dave, what have the last years done for you? That's not enough?
Oh, I want it all. Do you know how many times I watched my team lose to them in the playoffs? Too many. So they deserve all of the hurt and failure. Not because guys get hurt. No, I don't want that stuff happening. But I just want them to lose as a team and do poorly as a team.
Yeah. Well, this kind of feels like the last run, regardless. So,
but it can't. I mean, Noah's under contract for another year. They have Rose under contract for another 2 years. Gasol for three. Gibson's on. I mean, they're kind of stuck with this team.
Yeah, but this is their last run of contention, is what I mean. They might bring everybody back. Thibodeau might be out, which is huge. And you got to build around the margins, I guess. Do a better job with that. But. Yeah, I don't know, and we'll see what happens with Jimmy Butler. Nothing is guaranteed with Chicago's ownership.
As a Knicks guy, my first play this offseason is offering him max and making Chicago pay it. That's my first move. I ignore Draymond, I ignore Kawhi, and they're in the Western Conference. I think those guys are staying. I'm not worried about it. Chicago's in my conference. They have a cheap owner. So whether I'm going to make them pay as much as they possibly can.
Well, if you do that, what about, wouldn't you rather go out and get a guy like Chris Middleton and focus on someone who maybe you can reasonably attain?
Butler would be one. Then I'd go to Middleton. Then I go to Damari Carroll. Then I go to Danny Green. I think that's my order right now.
Okay, that's interesting. That's not a bad order by any means. I haven't really thought too much about the New York Knicks. I'm writing something about LaMarcus Aldridge and the potential destinations that he may take a look at this summer, and the Knicks are
just
on that list.
No, take them off. Take them off. I don't need another 30-year-old big man who plays power forward and doesn't make sense next to Mel. No. You can take us off the list.
I'll trade Melo.
I think Melo, I had this discussion through DM with someone. I think Melo is a better player than LaMarcus Aldridge if he's used correctly. If they're both playing power forward, now there's some injuries aside, because yes, that's a factor that needs to be considered. Just specifically on playing basketball, I think Carmelo is better than Aldridge.
I disagree with you there. I like Carmelo, but I think his best days are behind him, whereas I think LaMarcus Aldridge is just beginning to, you say he's 29, let's be clear right now. He's technically not 30 years old yet, but I also think that the next few years of his career could be really interesting if he untaps the three-point line, which he started to do in this playoff series, and he did a little bit this season. So I like LaMarcus a lot. I think he's a really good player.
That would change it for me a little bit. If Aldridge starts taking 4 or 5 threes a game and can hit them at a 38 to 40% clip like Melo does, that would change the argument for me. If he does that and he does that consistently, then yes, I think Aldridge is a better player right now. Look, and I get his look. I'm not a no mid-range shot person. I think there is value in making teams defend all three phases of the court. You have to defend at the rim. You got to defend the mid-range, and you got to defend the three. And it opens up things for other people, and he makes them at a decent rate. But with what he does, there's just too many wasted possessions in a game, and we saw that in this Grizzlies series. If he's not scorching hot, he misses too many shots, and he doesn't score at an efficient enough rate.
Well, he just had a terrible series, I think. I think
He hasn't been good in the playoffs since those first two games against the Rockets.
Those were pretty good games, though.
But they were incredible, but we're talking, there's been like, that. There was another, how many games in that series? There was another four games in that series, there was five against the Spurs, and now there was five. We're talking about, so 14, or I'm not good at math, 14, 15, something like that, games that he hasn't been really that great in the playoffs.
I don't think he's the best player in the world, but I like LaMarcus Aldridge, and I think he can be a very effective player into his mid-30s. That's where I'm just going to leave it at that.
I think you need what the Blazers did perfectly. They had him in the right context. When you have a guy who shoots the volume of mid-range shots around him, you need to have a boat ton of three-pointers. So he has to go to a spot that correctly surrounds him again.
Yeah, no question. That pretty much applies to every player in the NBA who's not like Steph Curry or LeBron James or Chris Paul. I mean, these guys, you have to be in a situation where that complements your skill set, because no one's great at everything except for a couple of guys.
How did you get us here?
You started talking about the Knicks.
No, I blame you. It's your fault. Let's see. So we did Bucks Bowl. What second round series are you looking forward to the most?
I think the second round is really, really interesting all the way around. I guess, to be honest with you, the one I'm most looking forward to actually watching, just as a basketball fan, is Bulls Cavs, and that might not be the most popular answer, but I really want to see what LeBron can do and what Kyrie can do against a legitimate basketball team in the playoffs. LeBron's obviously proven himself. That wasn't really applying to him right there, but I want to see what LeBron can do sort of when he has to just ball hard. Because in the Celtics series, I mean, he was standing around on the perimeter. He wasn't really exerting himself at all on either end for 40 minutes a game. He was jacking up long twos late in the shot clock after just dribbling it around. Just because he could, he was toying with the team. So he can't really do that against the Bulls. And we know Love's out and J.R. Smith's going to be out for the first two games, and that really hurts their spacing. It really, really does. And I just want to see him try to force his will as a power forward in the series. It's going to be really fun.
If the Hawks aren't stupid and close out the series, I think Wizards-Hawks is going to be really fun. If Randy Whitman keeps doing what they're doing and kind of keeps their rotation flowing the same way, I kind of think the Wizards are a sneaky team that could maybe make the finals.
What I think about this series is, if you're going small against the Hawks, then you are unable to exploit their greatest weakness, which is their inability to rebound on either end of the floor. So I guess you're basically counting on Paul Pierce to demolish Paul Millsap. So good luck.
I mean, we've seen the Nets have used like Joe Johnson to guard him, and he's with his injury. He hasn't been able to get into the paint like he typically does. So I would just take the space, and you're also not. I mean, the Wizards' most played lineup in the playoffs so far is still with Nene and Gortat, so they're still playing a good chunk each game. But as you're filtering through your other lineups, as long as you continue, you go to that Pierce Porter 3-4 thing for the same. You keep doing it for 10-12 minutes a game, like you have been, and filtering it in instead of going back to Humphreys or more Drew Gooden at the power forward position as backups, then I think that's all I think you need to do. I think you need to still take advantage of that rebounding with the two big guys for a decent amount of time, but it's just playing smarter lineups as a whole throughout the game.
And then that's all fair. But then Otto Porter, I'm not sold on Otto Porter. And I picked the Wizards to beat the Raptors. I really didn't like the Raptors or really respect them as a team heading into the postseason. And I do respect guys like Damari Carroll and the swarming, the defense that Atlanta is able to deploy. So I think that Washington is a sexy pick right now, but I would still take the Hawks in that series.
I look at what Jared Jack and Williams have done at times to the Hawks, and then you go, oh crap, it's John Wall. Like, he's going to be a monster against that team.
That's a good point. Yeah, another great point. And Atlanta's bench has been atrocious in this series. Dennis Schroeder is just completely, I don't even know what happened to him. He wasn't like a star or anything in the regular season, but he was at least dependable. And I mean, Mike Budenholzer is—he's not even playing these guys anymore. He started the fourth of his starting lineup, which was kind of surprising last night. So, I mean, I'll still tune in and I'll be on the edge of my seat for Wizards Hawks. Don't get me wrong, but I would probably side with Atlanta.
The kid—I mean, it is Schroeder's like first real playoff minutes, and you're right about that. The Hawks were like the epitome of balance and not playing guys a lot of minutes. They were Spurs like during the regular season, and that can't happen anymore. They're basically become Clippers East. I tweeted that yesterday, so I'm reusing material.
Hey, I saw that tweet.
I could have just went along there, but I had to call myself out for that one. So then, what do we got? What do we got on the other side of the conference now? Is the other one set?
Well, we have Warriors-Grizzlies, which could be fun, maybe. It's probably not going to be.
No.
And then especially with Mike Conley, who, I mean, that guy does not look good. I don't think he's going to play in the series. I would be pretty surprised.
I'm going to reuse more material here. Did you see what happened to Archie Bradley?
I saw a picture of his face, yeah.
His face was worse.
That's a good question. I think in terms of what each guy is tasked to do in their professional day to day, I would say that Conley is his worst because he can't see out of his left eye, and he has several metal rods inserted into his face, so that's tough. But then again, when you get hit by a line drive, mentally you're just, your historically pitchers are never the same after that, so I feel for that guy.
And Archie Bradley looks like he has—it's not the size of a baseball. It's bigger. It's not the size of a basketball. It's like the size of one of those smaller dodgeballs you used when you were in elementary school. Like,
now, this is a lose-lose situation comparing these two.
But I agree with you. I think Conley's face looked a little worse. That was gross. I can't believe he agreed to go on TV with that. If I have that on my face, number one, I'm in a hospital room refusing to leave. Number two, if they make me leave, I'm just curled up in my bed in the fetal position crying for like 5 days.
You know what I really like? I really like how he wore a hoodie instead of like abiding by the league's dress code and like suit and tying it up with just a battered face. That would have been a real bad look. So I'm glad that the league let him just throw on some sweats. Clearly there was a pity party there. And
yeah.
I'm glad he got to do that. Be comfortable.
I'm also with you that I'd say about 4 or 5 months ago, I would have thought Grizzlies Warriors could have been fun, but I'm not on that bandwagon. Even if Conley's healthy, I think it's probably a 5-game series. Without him out, I don't think the Grizzlies win a game.
I think it's a sweep. The Grizzlies jacked up like 12 threes a game, I think, in the first round. That's not going to cut it. They can't score. And I mean, unless, I don't even want to say this out loud, but unless Jeff Green has a monster series, I don't see them winning a game or even being competitive. So, I mean, the last few times those two teams played, I believe, the game was over like 2 minutes into the third quarter. So they're not really playing the same sport.
I hate to bring it to this. There's just a mathematical part of this that needs to change for the Grizzly in terms of amount of points scored and shot selection and stuff, as you kind of hit on that. It's just sometimes it's basic math of the war. Unless they can stop the Warriors from making a boat ton of threes, they're in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, what will be fun though? There's two things that'll be fun in this series, and that's the head to head front court matchups. Draymond Green versus Zach Randolph is get your popcorn, and Gasol and Bogut. Those will be very, very fun, I think, especially when. Or primarily when Memphis has possession.
I am 100% with you. You have anything else you want to... You plugged your LaMarcus Aldridge piece. You failed at plugging your Blake Griffin piece, but I took care of it for you. You got anything else you want to get out there?
Well, technically, the Aldridge piece is not published yet, so I don't want to plug it if that never gets off the ground. But
that's a tease. You're teasing things.
That's fair. I'm teasing things. That's not in my nature, but I'll do it for this case. That's it. I'm just enjoying this ride right now. I'm loving the playoffs. It's my favorite time of the year.
Are you going to do any traveling, or are you just, if the Clippers are done, you're done?
That's in the air right now, TBD. So I would really like to go to the finals. We're seeing if that can happen right now.
All right. Well, hopefully one of your nine. You got to get all the places you write for and just chip in a little bit.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Just get a mass email chain going with
all
my editors.
Just be like, all right, one of you take care of the hotel, one of you take care of my food, and one of you buy me my alcohol, and we're good. All right.
I think you're onto something.
Yeah, see, I should be your agent. Jesus. All right, Mike, thank you very much. Appreciate it. And that wraps up another edition of the Podium Game Podcast.